You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston, and for today's episode, it's a very special episode because I'm joined by world number four and huge Manchester United fan, Nathan Aspinall. Nathan, pleasure to have you here. First of all, how are you? And did you watch Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3 on Sunday afternoon?
So yeah, very well. Thank you for asking. But yeah, what a game. Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah,
I was in
Scotland doing exhibitions, so made sure I got back in time, and yeah, unbelievable performance. About time, innit? Let's be honest.
It is. It's not been a fantastic season, but they needed that, didn't they? You were just saying before we came on air, you don't really get a chance to watch as many games as maybe you did in the past now, because you are just so busy.
Yeah, before the darts took off, I was watching games, you know, home and away, midweek, weekend, went quite a lot, but because of the darts, it kind of takes over your life. So yeah, unfortunately I don't get to watch as much as I'd like, but there's a few big United fans at the darts, obviously Luke, Joe Cullen, Smithy. So when we're in the practice room, if it's like an afternoon game, we'll always have it on. But unfortunately I don't get to go that often anymore.
You were just saying before, as we said, we came on air, you had a season ticket as well, didn't you? I think your manager had one as well.
Yeah, so I had one years and years ago with my dad in the Stretford End. And we actually got rid of it the year that Fergie went. Probably the best decision I ever did. Deadly honest with you. But yeah, then obviously Martin, my manager, he had one, and we used to go a few times when we could, like I say, when we had time off. But, you know, he very quickly learned that he was wasting his money because he was never there. So yeah, we got rid of it. And yeah, I've not been for 18 months, 2 years now. I don't think I've been for, but hopefully I'll find a weekend soon.
You're going to be invited back after this podcast. We were just talking about
Luke, so.
Luke Littler's appearance at Carrow.
Littler's been there.
We need to get you in there.
Yeah,
yeah, it feels right. To break the ice then, we'll start off with some quick fire questions, if that's okay. I'd like to clip these up and put them on social media, so no pressure. We'll start off by your favourite film of all time.
My favourite film of all time? Well, there's two really. Shawshank Redemption.
Good shot.
And The Lion King. Very controversial, but The Lion King. I love The Lion King.
Your favourite band or singer?
Eminem.
Good shot as well. Your death row meal or your last meal on earth?
It will be steak and chips with a Roquefort sauce.
And how would you like the steak?
Medium rare.
Good shout as well. If you hadn't been a sportsman, what would you have been?
The only thing I was good at school was maths. So before, obviously, I went darts, I was an accountant. So a boring answer, but I'll be an accountant.
We'll get into that, because yeah. I didn't actually realise you were formerly accountant. My producer told me that. And lastly, your favourite type of cheese?
Stilton.
Good shout as
yes,
well.
Yes, very nice.
So we'll just start off, Nathan, you're obviously from Stockport, but you support United. How did that happen? Because I imagine a lot of City fans, or was there a lot of City fans around there when you were
there? There's more City fans in Stockport than United, but obviously you inherited, don't you? You know, my dad was a United fan. And I always went Old Trafford instead of Edgeley Park. I think as the times have moved on, I've been doing a lot with Stockport, and I've been to Stockport quite a few times. A lot of my mates growing up were massive diehard County fans, so it's a bit more of a family effect, shall we say, at Stockport. But yeah, the two, I'm from Stockport. I love going watching County. I hope, want them to do as well as they can. But, you know, primarily, I am a Red.
And your earliest memories then, can you remember? People always ask, can you remember your first game? I can't personally remember mine. Do you remember your first game? Yeah, I hate putting people on the spot with that one.
No. Obviously, remember the treble in 99.
That was my next question.
That was probably the first time, the oldest memory that I have. And obviously, the Van der Sar save that time was class. But they're probably the two oldest memories that I have of United.
But presumably, you said you got rid of your season ticket in 2013. So you saw some fantastic games, some huge trophy wins.
Yeah.
Anything that stands out? I mean, some great players, Wayne Rooney, Ronaldo. Yeah, watching them each week.
Brilliant. Ronaldo was the one. I'm a massive Ronaldo fan. Even when he left, you know, obviously all the United fans were asking him for him to go. I didn't want him to go. You know, I absolutely, he's my idol, Ronaldo, if I'm deadly honest with you. So when he came back, it worked fantastic because, like I say, Martin then got these season tickets. And the first game he went was, he scored the hat-trick against Newcastle, first game back. And, yeah, what an atmosphere. Just the Viva Ronaldo going around the stadium was unreal. And, yeah, I think you get to, you know, go and see people like him, obviously like your Rooney's and stuff like that. Just amazing, amazing moments. Can't really remember the games, if I'm going to be deadly honest with you, because long time ago, I've had a lot of sleep since then. But amazing, amazing experience at Old Trafford.
Everything felt possible in that game. Ronaldo returned. It was a special atmosphere and he scored. And people thought, United going to go and win the Premier League?
Yeah. Nah, it had to happen though, didn't it? Obviously, everything around Ronaldo, what he did before he left. And then when he came back, everyone knew that day something special was going to happen. And you know, I think it was like 10 minutes in he scored, wasn't it, or something? Yeah. It was inevitable he was going to get an hat trick, but yeah, I remember that was a great day.
In terms of this season then, I know you said you can't exactly watch every game, but what have you thought of it? It's not been pretty at times, has it?
No, that's why I don't watch it. I don't know. They're so up and down, aren't they? I don't really know what to say.
Last season was fantastic, obviously. Top four, trophy, Ten Hag, fantastic first year. And they just seem so inconsistent, don't they? Like you say, in and out. Some games, they can turn it on, and the next week they'll lose. So frustrating.
Yeah, I think they've either been like getting a goal early and then sitting back, and you know, a bit like in England, isn't it, really? You know what I mean? But from what I've seen, it's just not, there's no will to win. Personally, if I'm deadly honest with you, people don't look like they care, if I'm deadly honest with you. That's what I see from it. You know, certainly like Rashford, you know, he looked a bit different, I felt, a weekend, but he just doesn't look like he's bothered. You know, there's so many players that just look like they're getting a salary and that's it, which isn't United. You know, you play for that shirt, it's a massive club, but yeah, times have changed, aren't they?
I think fan opinion's definitely turning on Rashford, which is, it's a shame to see, because he's almost the poster boy of the club, born in Wivenshaw, came through the academy, obviously a fantastic player, but again, he's just so frustrating and inconsistent, isn't he? Could you see him maybe leaving the club in the summer, or would you like him to stay and push on?
I don't know. You look at the weekend, how many chances did he miss? You know, that
he should have scored the last kick of the game.
Yeah, the last kick of the game. Yeah. That probably confidence, maybe. Yeah, he probably knows that the fans have had enough of him at the moment. But it's up to him now to prove that he, you know, deserves that shirt and deserves to beat United. And at the moment, he doesn't. But you know, time will tell. Will he go? I don't think he will. Should he go? Probably. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
I just can't imagine him not wearing a Manchester United shirt.
But he's only young though, isn't he? So yes, maybe he might go out to Europe somewhere.
PSG might be calling, I think. Yeah. And where do you stand on Erik ten Hag then? Because as we've said, results haven't been great this season.
I like him because I think he's not like a yes man. How we dealt with the Ronaldo situation and stuff like that. I think he's a very strong character, and I think that's what United need. I think everyone we've had since Fergie aren't that type of manager. I like him, but he still needs to do a lot more to win a lot of the fans over, in my opinion.
Where does he stand then among the managers post Sir Alex Ferguson? Obviously Van Gaal, David Moyes, for example, Jose Mourinho. Where would you rank him among those? That's been a conversation this season after results have kind of slipped and people have kind of suggested where should he be among those managers?
Well, you got to look at the results, you know, top four last year. So surely that speaks volumes compared to the last 10, 12 years. You'd probably have to put him in the top three, wouldn't you?
Would Mourinho be at the top? Number two?
I don't know. I don't really know. Certainly Van Gaal's not there, is he?
We'll give Mourinho top.
Yeah, we'll give Mourinho top. And we'll put Ten Hag second for now. But again, he's still got a lot of work to do. I know there's a lot of kids playing at the moment. How good was he, by the way?
I'm mad. Yeah, it was fantastic. Wow. Goal, fantastic.
Yeah, but even when he came on, I thought he was great, to be fair. So obviously, he's got a lot of young lads now. So I think give him time, give him another season or two and see what happens.
And you were a footballer yourself. We were just talking about that.
I was.
Give us a bit of context on that.
No, I was a goalkeeper. Well, I was a centre mid at the start. And then I kind of got pushed further and further back and ended up being a goalkeeper. So I love my football. I miss it so much because obviously I can't, being a goalkeeper, I can't play. You know, these are my bread and butter. These are what make me money. So I played for, I had trials at Stockport County when I was very young. And then I got offered from being at Stockport, I got offered a contract at Rangers. But back then, I think it was like 10, 11, my family had to move to Scotland. Yeah, you never know, you know, who knows, you know, what could have happened. But, you know, I think at 10 and 11, it was too much of a commitment for the family. So we turned it down and I ended up being at the United Goalkeeping Academy. So my coaches were Ron Healy. I'm not sure if you've heard of Ron Healy. Ron Healy and his son, Scott Healy. They were my two main coaches. Absolutely loved it. Never played for United, never got the chance to, you know, to train with the team or anything of that nature. But it was every Saturday, Sunday I used to train. I used to play Intercounty in Stockport. I'm not sure if you know that, but yeah, Intercounty. Played for my local team, Hillgate Boys, and yeah, loved it. But unfortunately, I got released when I was like 15 because I was too small. Ironically, got released, had a massive growth spurt, but it was too late, the damage was done. And I played a bit for Cheadle Town before I finally retired at 17. But yeah, I played for Cheadle, which is like semi-pro level. Played a few games for the first. And story is basically, I played in the, I think it was like the final FA Cup qualifying round or something like that. And we was 3-3 last minute. Goalkeeper, one-on-one, came out, gave a penner away, didn't save the penner. Lads weren't best pleased with me, shall we say. So they, smashed the changing room up. What are you doing? This, that and the other. And I was just like, that's it. Yeah. Threw my gloves in the bin, never played since.
Goalkeeper gloves in the bin, you pick up the darts, you obviously went into accountancy as well. Yeah. Fantastic career to prepare you for darts, I suppose, because numbers.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was good at school. You know, I wouldn't say I was thick, but I just didn't enjoy many subjects at school apart from maths and PE. You know, I did my PE GCSE on the golf course. You know what I mean? So all I did was play sport and do maths. So accountancy was the easy option, really. And I loved it. Did AAT. Had a fantastic job. I've had a couple of fantastic companies that I worked for before, obviously, the darts. And I was trying to mix the two. And it was so hard. It was like, I'm tipping up. I'm on the Pro Tour, working, trying to beat your Van Gurens, your Peter Wrights, your Gearing Prices, when they've been practicing all week and I've been working, it's so hard. And getting to that position to be able to do it full time is key.
So what was your lifestyle like back then? Were you working 9-5? Yeah, coming home, just playing darts.
Yeah. I actually worked in a place called Mould as well, North Wales. So when I first started, I used to have to get up at 7, leave my house at 7:30, get to Mould. I start work at 9, finish work at 5, go and get like a burger or something, stay in the office 6 till 9 doing night school, get home for 9:45, play a bit of darts, and did that for 12 months.
Were you busier then, do you think, than you are now? Do you have more free time? No, I still listen.
Nah, I'm still busy. It's a crazy schedule, isn't it? It was, but you know, when people always ask you like, how much do you practice and stuff like that, not that much anymore. I did all the hard work back then to get where I'm at, and then I left that job. Started having worked for a company called Sambro in Bury. They made like Disney toys. Worked for the accountancy firm there, and they were fantastic with me. As soon as I was getting better and better, the hours dropped there, and they enabled me to go part time, bit of a sponsor deal, and they were fantastic supporting me in the early part of my career. But something had to give because I was doing okay, but I wasn't just getting to that. You know, I might win one or two games on a pro tour, but then I'll get beat because I just didn't have that consistency because I was tired or wasn't practicing or whatever. And, you know, I'll blow smoke up his bum. My manager came and you know, enabled me to quit my job. He got me the sponsorship that I needed for enabling me to go full time. And as I say, the rest is history. We've had a fantastic, 7 years together now. You know, we've won 3 TV tournaments, 2 majors, God knows how many pro tours, and we're in the top 4 in the world. So, you know, I think between me and Martin, the relationship that we've had has been fantastic. He's enabled me to quit the job. I've come on board. We've worked well together. And now he's got a fantastic stable. You know, we signed an all right kid at the moment in Littler. He's not bad, is he? Signed him last year, and look what he's done. He's got Dolby, Andy Bolton. So, yeah, we've got a fantastic team behind us now.
Could you tell us the story about you hitting your first 9 dart? Because I've been informed.
Have you seen this? Have you heard this story?
I've been told. You've been out at night out with your missus. You come back a few beers and you hit a 9 dart.
Yeah, so we've been out and, as you do with your missus at 3 in the morning when you both had a drink. Let's have a game of darts, love. You know, and that's what we did. We had a board in the back room, just started playing darts. And this is, honest to God, it's no word of a lie. I literally picked him up. I went 180, 180, 141. No, like that's true. Not Sean Murphy. That was actually true. That happened. But unbelievable. That was the first one ever done. I never forgot
it. What was your reaction then? Because surely you just think,
surely now we can go to bed.
Oh, yeah. more Jager bombs at that point, probably.
It was good. It was, I don't even remember where we've been, but I just remember getting in. Let's have a game of darts. And my missus thinks she's really good when she wears her blue pyjamas. Don't know why. So she's like, put pyjamas on and we'll have a game. So he comes down in the blue pyjamas and I pinged a 9 against her and that was it. Good night.
Did you train in the emigration in Stockport back then, or do you still go in now and are you a celebrity now? Did you go to the Emmy there before you went to
the Emmy? Yeah, see, it's a sore subject really because they keep marrying me to go in and I just don't go in.
But you are busy, to be fair.
I am, but I moved out of Stockport as well now. That makes it tougher. Fantastic times in the MA, you know, growing up, we used to have such a laugh in there, you know what I mean? And even when the darts first started, the support they gave me, there's a load of pubs in Stockport, to be fair, the MA, Starving Garter, the Finger Post, which is where I actually did start my darts, the Finger Post. It's now a food place, actually, I don't even play darts. But, fantastic memories of the boozers in Stockport and the support they show me now, you know, these big signs, every time I'm playing in a big game, come and watch the Aspay live. And yeah, the people send me videos all the time with all in my shirt watching it. And there's the Gardener's Arms. They've got like a picture of me and Phil Foden. Obviously, he's like a Stockport lad as well. On the bar, massive picture. Most pubs in Stockport have got my head somewhere on there. So yeah, it's great to get the support from obviously your local area.
Could you go anywhere in Stockport? Or someone asking you?
Not really. It's pretty bad. That's why I moved. I'm deadly honest with you. It was getting to the point where, again, darts has been getting bigger and bigger since I've started. Wow, you know, 7 years ago, it was getting there, but nothing like it is now. And you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, I think once you get the Premier League, it's a whole new level. If you're top 20, top 25, people who watch darts know who you are. If you're in the Premier League, people who like sport know who you are, and just anyone. So yeah, the popularity was going through the roof, and it's nice, but when you go on Asda for a food shop, when you've got like half a day off and it's taking you 4 hours, you know,
you've got the missus, the kids.
And that was the other thing as well. People were stopping me when I was going out for food with my kids and my missus and that. And, you know, times like that, you're like, oh, just leave me alone. You
I guess it's the side of fame people don't really understand. And footballers obviously have it really, really heavily. Yeah. But it gets to that point in darts now where you guys are really high profile.
I think it's all about the protection now of the players, you know. I think dart players are so easily contactable compared to any other sportsman, and I think that's because of the way darts has always been. But now we're not just, you know, pub players who drink loads of beer and smoke and play darts. You know, we're actually athletes now, and we have the things that we have to do to keep ourselves fresh, so every night we can go on there and perform at our best. It's tough. So yeah, I think it's getting to that. Obviously it's nowhere near the football standard, but you know, I even went to Jamaica last year. I thought, no one's going to know me in Jamaica. Gets off the plane. Oh, Nathan, can I have a picture?
I'm just like, imagine you on the beach in some bloke asking for a selfie.
Some big Jamaican guy.
I was reading an interview before you came today and you called yourself the Jack Grealish of darts. Could you give us an insight into that name? Is that because you like a drink or your personality? Of course, you're not saying anything on this podcast.
I just love a drink. Basically, I'm a party animal. you know, it probably my manager's pet hate. He wants me to be more professional and stop going out drinking till the early hours, but just who I am. You know, I've got a fantastic circle of friends. There's me and Kirsty, and there's three other couples that, you know, we're thick as thieves together. We always go out together. And the problem with me is, once I start, I can't stop. That's what I say about the Jack Grealish. You know, I'll go out and I'll be like 6-7 o'clock in the morning by the time I get back, and just have a laugh, and the pubs will shut. Everyone back to mine, come on, we'll put the tunes on and love karaoke and that kind of thing. So, now what I meant by that was I just love the party scene, and, you know, I'm only 32, so yeah, I work hard, but I also play hard.
Couple of questions then. What's your favourite drink? What would you sing on karaoke? And if you had to pick someone on a night out to come out with you from the circuit, from the dart circuit, would it be Chris Toby, presumably?
No,
like
he don't drink, he's a melt. Honestly, he's a good lad, Chris, but yeah, he doesn't really like drinking. There's not many that don't on a night out, but he's one of them. But favourite drink, it's got to be a baby Guinness, hasn't it? As a shot, baby Guinness, we love a baby. But the go-to drink when I'm out is Jack and Cola. I know where I'm out with that. Karaoke, God, where do we start? Hey, do you want me 80s or like maybe rap one?
Give us your biggest hit, the one you can do best.
None. I think I'm really good, but I'm really not.
Well, after seven drinks, everyone sounds alright, don't they? That's the thing.
I don't mean Lose Yourself, Eminem. but the one I always tend to go to, because I know it, is, believe it or not, Yazoo, Only You.
Do you want to sing it?
Looking from a window above, it's like yes. Story of love, that one. Yeah, lads from the darts to go out with.
Who's the most fun? If you had to pick someone that you were just seeing you out in Newcastle, didn't you, after the Premier League, who'd you go with?
So Joe Cullen is probably the most fun, but I've got to stick with my boy, because we like Dick and Dom, me and Cheers on a night out on the Jack Daniels. Stay away. It gets messy. Yeah.
Excellent. We'll leave it there for part one. And part two, we'll discuss more of Nathan's darts. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to part two of the Manchester Is Red podcast. Now, Nathan, a bit more darts chat. How are you finding the darts at the moment? Because an excellent 6-2 win over Rob Cross next to that. I was watching, very impressed.
Yeah, up and down, mate, this season. You know, back end of last year after winning a match play, there's no words to describe it apart from rubbish, pants, terrible, dreadful. But got put back in the Premier League this year, because obviously won the match play, and I thought this year was going to be the year that I'm going to go and, I wouldn't say dominate the game, but certainly win title after title, and it's not panned out like that. It's been a struggle at the start of the year, but I think you've seen over recent weeks, it's getting there. I'm winning Premier League night. I've had two finals, and I'm probably playing my BC game. So you've got to take positives from that. But yeah, I don't know. Mixed emotions, really. I'm happy because I'm in the top four. I made a semis of the first TV tournament of the year, the Masters, played well in the UK Open, but yeah, this summit not clicking at the moment, and hopefully I'm going to find it soon.
How do you put your finger on that then? How does it work? Is it a little bit more practice, or is it just rhythm? Well,
ironically, I've stopped practicing. So before the Worlds, I was practicing like 6 hours a day with Smithy, and I think it affected me too much. I think I was putting that much pressure on myself because I was putting that much work in that I didn't play well. But now I've gone back to how I used to be when I won the match play. Don't practice.
Gary Anderson does the same, doesn't he? He talks about
He says he doesn't practice. I reckon he's the biggest practice on the circuit, to be fair. But it's just keep going, and something will click. You know, I think I've struggled with my finishing this season, and I've changed something up on that, and I feel confident now. I'm going for on my double. So I think the combination of the confidence and starting it in my finishing, once them two click, then everyone knows how good I am, and I'll be very tough to beat.
How was the disappointment at the Worlds then, obviously, around Christmas time? Because you would have expected to go further than that.
Yeah, going back to the practice then, I think I just burnt myself out. I think because I didn't play in the last tournament before the Worlds was Minehead, and I pulled out, I didn't qualify, if I'm deadly honest with you. And I pulled out of that and took my misses away, and I thought, right, I've got 6 weeks here now of hard graft, and I worked so hard, my game is in such a good place, and to turn up and play that was really disappointing. And I wasn't the nicest guy to be around Christmas Eve, shall we say, but woke up Christmas Day morning, kids are there, they're buzzing that I'm not going back to London. So, you know, I've never been beat before Christmas, and it is really tough on your family. So when you do get beat, you kind of, make the most of them opportunities. And yeah, we ended up having a fantastic Christmas. So, you know, it was a
swings and roundabouts.
Swings and roundabouts. Obviously gutted at the time, but when it gets to like the 28th of December and you're still playing with your kids with all the new toys and you're not in London playing darts, you kind of have a lot bothered.
So using that disappointment going forward, obviously I presume it makes you hungry, especially with the Premier League coming around. And do you kind of funnel that into your energy when you approach the Premier League?
Yeah, I think it's not resting on your laurels kind of thing. So I've done it in the past where, like when I won the UK Open, like you think, oh my God, wow. And then you kind of step off and then very quickly you can fall down. And as easy as it is to get to the top, it's even easier to fall. And I think that's kind of what I learned from last year. It's like, right, I had an amazing 12 months, you know, two finals, major finals, won the match play. You've got to push on now because there's money to be defending. And if you could kind of sit back and just let things deal with itself, I'm going to end up being outside the top 16 if I'm not careful. So you've got to work hard, you've got to keep that focus there. And, you know, I think for me, it's not the practice, it's the head. If my head's in a good place, then I'm very tough to beat. And, you know, like I touched on before, I've got a fantastic team around me, you know, my sports psychologist, my management, my family. So, yeah, I feel like very, very soon, my best is going to come.
Can you put in the words what it feels like then to be up on that stage? I mean, obviously, you just won that night at Exeter recently. Surely the adrenaline, you're on such a high. And is it hard to kind of come down from that when you get back to your hotel room? Or do you just go straight out?
Well, it is when you got mine the day after in the UK Open. So, yeah, I have so much adrenaline pumping through my body when I'm playing the walk-on, you know, at the start. Oh, my God. You know what I mean? If anyone's been to watch it live, they'll understand what I'm talking about. It is electric. You know, Joe Cullen's got a good walk-on song, but nothing compared to the Brightside.
Why did you choose Mr. Brightside then? Because I've also read that you fucking hate it was a direct quote. Do you hate your own song? Or obviously it gets everyone going, it stirs up the crowd. It's one of the best walk-on songs, I'd say.
No, I hate it, yeah. I used to.
But it does get everyone going. I think it's fantastic.
I was in a New Year's Eve, I was in a club called, I don't even know what's there anymore, Brebbiol in Stockport. And I got beat in the semis of the Worlds, came back, went out for New Year's Eve, and I was just in there thinking this is an opportunity because my walk-on song wasn't working.
What was it? At the
just
time?
Can't get enough. I think it was Depeche Mode, and it just wasn't working. It wasn't getting the crowd going. And Mr. Brightside came on, and the place erupted. That's the one. So I went for that, and you know it's grown and grown and grown. And I still don't know the words. I stand on the front doing all this. I still don't know the words, but they love it. You know what I mean? It's now part of darts. You know, Mr. Brightside is darts now. So when I was going about like, I don't like it, I hear it every day in my life. You know, Premier League nights, I hear it three or four times a night, and then got my earphones in and it'll come on my Spotify. I'm like, change, it's gone now. But the crowd love it. And I love doing it. You know, when you imagine what feeling 15,000 people all singing your song back to you. Can't explain that feeling. So the buzz that I have from that, obviously, then when you're winning, the adrenaline at the end of the night is obscene. It really is, and it's so hard to come down from it. You'd think I'd have learned yet over 5 years, but nah, I'm still like counting the cracks in the ceiling when I get back to my hotel room.
My brother loves that song. There's been a few times we've watched darts. He gives us a text. Oh, did you see the ass whipping up the crowd there? Because it really does get the crowd going. What's the usual week then for Nathan Aspinall? How do you prepare? Because you're saying you're not practicing as much, but walk us through your regime, your general week.
No, so not normally, well, generally speaking, Monday, this year, Monday, Tuesday are Pro Tours, so Sunday night I'd be travelling to a Leicester or a Wigan or a Milton Keynes or whatever, play Monday, Tuesday, Pro Tours, Wednesday, travel to a Premier League venue, wherever that may be, normally media commitments to do, Thursday night you play your Premier League, and then it's either like Friday, Saturday off, or you might have a Euro tour. So like last week we was in Brighton, I played Thursday night and had a flight at 6 o'clock Friday morning to Belgium, and then I had to play Friday night. So it is full on. Like,
how do you have time to do anything?
You don't really. Yeah, that's it. And this is why it's about managing your calendar. Like the footballers, for example, yes, they train, but they train like what, 11 till half one, and then they've got the afternoon off.
A lot of free time.
Yeah, they have a lot of free time. And even when they're playing away, they might have one night in a hotel. I literally spend 5 days a week in a hotel in probably four different ones. You know what I mean? So there is so much travelling, and people don't understand how much there is to do in the darts. But it's about managing your calendar. It's taking time off, and I'm probably the world's worst at that because I take so much time off, maybe too much, because I get burnt out. You know what I mean? I've got two kids at home, I've got a missus. You got to see them at some point. You know, there's more to life than just playing darts and earning money. You got to, you know, spend time with your family. So I do take a bit of time off. I'm supposed to be playing now as we speak. There's a tournament in Germany, but I decided to pull out and come and see you lot instead of dinner.
Good choice, I think.
Yeah, I thought so.
I imagine it's mentally tough, that, because nights in hotel rooms if you're away from the family. And how do you spend those hours in a hotel room? Do you watch a TV series?
Yeah, I've just thanked God that Netflix exists.
What are you watching at the moment?
I've actually got nothing to watch at the moment. I've just finished that. Is it Griselda?
My mate is just watching that. He says quite good.
Yeah, very good. So, in fact, tell you what I started watching last night. I know it's been out for a couple of years. Squid Game. Have you seen that?
I've not yet to watch
it.
Yeah, really very good things.
Yeah, it's good. So, but now I love all, like, my Breaking Bad, Prison Break, Stranger Things is my favourite. So I just kind of watch them, get back to my room, put them on, and just literally just chill.
April 4th, a few weeks' time, obviously night 10 of the Premier League, your homecoming, Nathan, formerly the MEN Arena, I'll sneak that in. How excited are you for that? It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's the one that I look forward to all year. Last year was my debut playing at Manchester, and the PDC kind of did me and Mike over. They put us against each other because I think they wanted someone to get through to the semi-final, but I didn't want to play Mike, he's not a mank, he's a bit scouse, isn't he, really? But
he likes
to think he's a mank.
Yeah.
But me and him played each other, he's a United fan, so I thought the support would have been split. They were on my side, if I'm deadly honest with you, but I never really get that nervous when I play. I was nervous that night.
Is that just because it means more?
Yeah, I think there's so many friends, family. Everyone there is from, I won't say they're there just for me, but they want me to win so much compared to everyone else. And you can feel it, you know, you can feel them on your back. Same at Blackpool, you know, they want you to win. And, you know, when people like Gezi gets booed and stuff like that, sometimes it's actually easier when you're getting booed because you're like, well, they want me to lose. So if I win, you know, it's kind of two fingers up at you. When you've got 12,000 people all willing you to win, each time you miss a double, and then you're thinking, oh no, you know what I mean? Please go in. But I think I learned from last year, and I'm playing Rob Cross this year, so I'm not playing another, you know, lad from this area. So I think the support's going to be amazing, and yeah, I can't wait, and hopefully get my first win at Manchester.
Have there been many examples of the crowd being on your back? I can't think, you seem to be a generally
there's been a few times, nothing major, you know, a lot of it I get in Holland or Australia.
Aussies
they
don't
hated
like
me
you
in Australia.
Yeah,
I don't get it, no. They didn't like me in Australia, to be fair. And then I think what you got to do is, like, Gezi's done it so many times, you kind of react, then it's worse. You know,
I was going to ask you about
you try and take 10,000 guys on, you ain't winning, are you? You know what I mean? So I did it in Australia, and I was playing Whitlock, to be fair, and they just started on me, and I turned around at first kind of having, come on then, as a bit of a joke. They didn't take it as a joke.
Wow.
I swear it's down, like, I think there was like 30 guys waiting for me outside, to be honest with you, because I was giving them that much grief back. But part and parcel of the sport, you know what I mean? Nine times out of 10, I'll get the support wherever I go. So, you know, if I get booed now and then, like I did at Cardiff against Gez, you know, I'm a big enough man to deal with that.
What did you guys think then at the Worlds when Gezi came out?
Yeah, I thought he'd mega. I actually seen him 2 days before. I'm sure he put a post on with these earmuff things. And I seen him, and I was like, oh, seen your post, mate. Brilliant. He went, I'm not joking. I'm laughing. He went, Nath, I'm telling you now, if they start on my back, I'm wearing them. Yeah, okay, guess, whatever. You know, he did. He walked out on him. And I'm like, I was sat at home going, what is he doing? You know what I mean? But it's I don't understand why he didn't bring Gezi headphones out. He would have made a fortune, wouldn't he?
That was a misbrand deal, wasn't it? I think an oversight from his manager.
Yeah, but he did it, and obviously that backfired as well, didn't it?
Everyone likes to talk about darts nicknames, and I know yours is just the Asp. Well, did you just think, do you know what? Simple nickname, take that. Or were you stuck for inspiration?
So, my nickname was Aspie growing up as a kid. And dart shirts, well, when I first started, it's about having like a big picture on the back and a nickname. So I was kind of thinking what I can use, but to tie in with Aspie, and someone could say, well, why don't you have the asp. It's a snake. Kill Cleopatra. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. So you didn't? I'm nodding along, but I didn't know that.
So the asp is obviously, it's a snake. Kill Cleopatra. Why don't you have a snake on your back? The asp. Yeah, go on then. Why not? That's not a bad idea. But if I could go back and change it, a lot of people, because of the way that I am when I'm playing, they all call me like waspy. Like when I got the bit between my teeth. So maybe it could have been called the wasp, maybe. With a yellow shirt. I could come on to buzzing or something.
Too late for a brand change now,
yeah,
isn't
can't
it?
Do now, yeah.
On the subject of nicknames, the new crew were just talking about them as well before came on air. Obviously, the same stable, same management, isn't it? When was the first time you realised you had a bit of talent? Because it was kind of word on the scene, wasn't it, this lad was coming through?
Yeah, he was. I played him, I think it was Chester, in a Riley's tournament. And I beat him 4-3, and I think he was about 4. No, anyway, he's about 11, 12. And
did he have a beard then as well?
Yeah, he did actually. Wow, you're like, who's this kid? Like, and then I remember seeing his dad was with him, and his dad was dead critical of him because he'd lost. And I'm like, mate, he's 12. Like, I was like top 16, I think, in the world at the time. I'm like, give him a break. No, he needs to learn, and you know, obviously that hard talk over the years has probably produced one of the best art players he's ever going to be in our sport. So he's amazing. You know what I mean? What else can you say? You know, us players are sick of seeing his head on our social media because he's just making stories every week, and you know, that's credit to him. You know what I mean? It's not just the media that are obsessed with him. He's the one that's bringing him to him, if that makes sense. You know, the amazing run at the world, then he hits a 9-dart against me in Bahrain, then he wins the tournament, then he wins the first Pro Tour, then he wins the first Euro Tour. So every week he's making stories, so that's full credit to him, but yeah, he's still not won a Premier League night yet. I've got one over him at the moment, haven't I?
You beat him recently as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that was sweet. Yeah, it's the first time I beat him, you know, since being a pro, and obviously we practiced with each other in the past, and you know, generally speaking, I got the better of him, but I think since the Worlds, he's a completely different animal, and yeah, I don't think with any of us I played well against each other in the first two times we played. Certainly Brighton was dreadful by both of us, but I think it was nice to actually play a decent game of darts with him. And yeah, I played fantastic, but I needed that for my own sake because I couldn't lose three out of three against him.
Would you compare it to your kind of rise at the Worlds in 2019?
No, yeah, completely different.
No, yeah. I mean, but you were huge then as well.
I
yourself.
Was 17.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
16.
You knocked out Gezi as well to Gerrit Price, didn't you? And was it Michael Smith in the semi-finals? That was a big story at the time.
Yeah, no, to be fair, I kind of get where you're coming from. I did come from nowhere. It was my debut as well, like Luke. So, you obviously went one step further than me. But, it probably does have a bit of similarity. The only thing is I won a major after that and he didn't. I can kind of get why you say it, but like I say, he was 16 at the Worlds, 16 years of age making a World Final, and not just scraping it, the way he played, the game against Rob Cross was obscene. So now full credit to him, you know, he's going to make us a lot work harder, that's for sure, because end of the day, like I said, you know, beforehand, you know, we've worked hard, so hard to get to where we're at, and he just tips up and starts beating us all. So yeah, we're going to want to put him back in his place.
Definitely. And what's your relationship with him, man? Because you're the same management, so I guess you're friends with Dobby and Litla, but you are competing as well, I guess.
Yeah, it's of course. Interesting dynamic. That's the difference between darts and a lot of other sports, is we are all so close. And I think you see in the moment, a lot of pundits are getting a bit annoyed with the fact that we're hugging after games and stuff like that. But, you know, look at the Premier League. You know, I'm with them 8 guys, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, for 4 months. Right, so half of my week I'm with these eight lads, so of course we're close, you know what I mean? And when you're on there, you want to beat each other, of course you want to smash 10 lumps out of each other, but after the game it's all respect. I don't think you'll ever see one game in the Premier League where it's a bit, you know, we call it a wet fish, you know what I mean? Everyone always gives each other respect, but now I've got, you know, get on with him, like I say, get on with Dobie, get on with everyone really. There's not many people that I don't get on with. Difference with Luke is he don't really talk because he's obsessed with
Xbox and
playing stuff
and,
on his phone.
Going back to that 2019 Worlds then, Nathan, I mean, obviously a fantastic run. How did you spend the money? Did you buy anything silly? Or can you remember, did anything stand out in your mind at that time?
Well,
you were very young.
This is the Worlds, you mean?
Yeah, in 2019.
I had a lot of debt, so I paid some of my debt off. Very sensible, which is something I'd never thought I'd be able to do.
It was life changing that though, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, because I was skint, you know what I mean? I had nothing. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think within 3 months, I won the UK Open, which was 100 grand, and the semis was 100 grand. So I'd won 200 grand in 3 months. But a month before I got to the Worlds, I had like 5 grand in my bank, if that. You know what I mean? So I've got all this money now. I'm thinking, what the hell do we do?
Has that been difficult, kind of getting that so quickly? I know you've worked so hard for it across the years, and eventually it kind of comes.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember speaking years ago to Rob Cross. He obviously won a hell of a lot more than what I won, but he won the Worlds. And he was saying that he just didn't know what to do. He was dead depressed. And I felt a bit like that, because all you've ever wanted to do as a kid is, you know, if you can be successful playing a sport that you love, travel in the world, give your family everything they want, that's what you want in it, in out of life. And then when it all comes to you, you're like, oh my God, like, what? It's overwhelming. And I did, you know, I was a bit down back when I started doing all that, winning all that money. And, you know, obviously going back to it, you know, don't want to keep blowing smoke up his ass, but, you know, management was there to help me get through them times, you know what I mean? You know, how to not necessarily invest it, but, you know, buy yourself a house, get yourself this, do this with it, do that with it, make sure you get your tax money.
How important to have that team around you? And you've mentioned a psychologist as well. How often do you speak? Because in elite sport, it's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, I think especially where the game's going now, you just need the right people. It's not just a guy saying, like, do that, do that, do that. You need to also have a bonded relationship with him. And we've been through dark times together, certainly me and my management have, but we've also had some amazing experiences. So, you know, and it's the same across the board, you know, not just me, but your Dobies, your Lutes, you know, it's all about helping each other out. And we have got, honestly, we've got a mega team. ZXF is a mega team. All the lads are fantastic. And, you know, but darts is getting to that next level now. So you need more than just management. You need, like, say, the sports psychologist. And I've been pushing so hard to try and get some of the other lads talking to him, because, you know, everyone else does it. Every other sport, footballers do it, boxers do it, golfers do it. You know, darts is probably the most brutal sport there is out there. You're on that stage on your own. If it's going wrong, it's only you that can sort it out. So you need to be very strong in the head. And, you know, the guy that I'm speaking to is working wonders on me. And yeah, it's great to have these people around you.
If you look at your career then, what would you say is the highest point? And then you've talked about some of the lows. What's been the most disappointing low?
Yeah, highest got to be the match play, without a doubt. You know, coming back from my injury, 12 months prior, never thinking I was ever going to really reach the heights again, to then winning the second biggest tournament. And it's, to be fair, obviously everyone wants to win world, be world champion, but for me, with where the tournament is, being in Blackpool and the support I get, that's the one I want to win so much. Legendary Phil Taylor Trophy, you know, the best to ever pick a dart up, was amazing. So without doubt, like, no question, that's a match play. Lowest point, there's been a few.
That's the nature of the sport,
yeah,
isn't it? That's the nature of the sport.
I'd probably have to say, as a whole, like, getting the injury that time, I thought that was it. I thought I'd back it at the accountancy firm. It was really bad. And again, luckily, you know, talking about having the right people around you, you know, I had the right people doing the treatment, the right specialist. I got the best doctor that I could possibly get.
Were you told that you might not be able to return to darts? Am I right in saying
that? No, it wasn't to that extent. You know, obviously these stories escalate, don't they? You know what I mean? Like the football story, some papers are putting that, like, I was nearly like in the England team. You know what I mean? That's how much stories get escalated. But no, it was bad. There's no doubt in that. It was bad. But they wanted to give me an operation, or an operation was on the cards, but I don't know how I'll recover from that, so I didn't want to do it. And it was just about letting it heal, basically. But it was 4 months, and in our sport, if you don't play for 4 months, your ranking is going down, and it's so hard to get back up. So it's not like football where you're guaranteed your wage. I wasn't making any money either for them 4 months. But yeah, it was tough. It was tough to deal with. And then trying to come back, I developed in darts, it's called a snatch. So because I was in pain, I was doing that all the time, getting beat all the time. And it was really, really tough.
How frustrating is that? Because obviously you're in such a good position. You get an injury, you come back.
And I was playing so well. I probably played the best darts of my life as well. I'd just come off Van Gerwen beat me in the semis at Europeans, wasn't it? European finals. And I tipped up to a pro tour 2 days after that, and I just felt it go. I was in such a good place mentally, darts-wise, and that happened. And, you know, these things happen. You know, ironically, since that's happened, I've come back and I've had two major finals and a win. So, things happen for a reason in life, don't they? But, yeah, it was pretty bad time, I'm not going to lie.
in a few months' time, obviously the World Match Play in July again.
How quick is that going?
I know it does fly. Wow. How excited to get back there! And who do you think your biggest threats are this summer?
Yeah, can't wait. Like I say, I love, it's just the best. Any doubt player asked, the atmosphere is mega. You know what I mean? It's diehard fans as well, so people know me by like a weekly ticket. It's just unreal. If you've never been, mate, you need to get there. He's class. But yeah, I love it. Can't wait. And hopefully win me, you know, defend my title. But biggest threats, you know, be wrong of me not to put Luke in that mix, wouldn't I? But for me, you know, the favourite.
You are the champion, though. That's the thing. You're going
Of course. And obviously the support I'll get will be amazing. But I think darts has gone through the roof again. The standard-wise, I mean, the last 12 months. Look, Gary Anderson is 52. He's probably playing the best darts he's ever played in his life. You know what I mean? He's banging 110 averages in, like, do you know what I mean? Like the 60 averages, it's obscene. So every game's going to be tough. But for me, I think the guy to watch is Luke Humphries. I think he's absolutely fantastic. I think you look at him in the Premier League this year. He bangs averages in that look like he's playing at an 80 average. When you're doing that, you're good. You know what I mean? Like Phil used to do it all the time. You'd watch him and go, he's not playing well there. It comes up 107. Do you know what I mean? Like when I bang 107 average, and I make you know I've had 107 average. You know what I mean? I'm jumping around like an idiot. It's just natural for Luke, and he's full of confidence. And yeah, I think he's the one to watch.
But he is a Leeds fan.
That is his problem. I'm not lying, though. I've never known. He's going to have to rethink it because everywhere he's been booed. I've not seen him be cheered.
It's getting
once.
That way, isn't it? Yeah. Why do you think that is?
He's a Leeds fan. There's no other reason, is there? But everywhere we've gone, even. Where were we last week? Nottingham. Oh my God. And I played. Did I play him last week? Didn't I? Yeah, in the final, yeah. Leeds scum. We all lately. And it was non stop.
But know what's going to happen when you go to the arena in a few weeks' time, the Manchester arena?
Yeah, luckily he's not playing one of us because it would have been bad. But yeah, he'll get cheered in Leeds, won't he, anyway?
Good luck for the rest of the season, Nathan. Cheers, mate. I'm sure you won't need it. Thanks for attending. Yes. Really appreciate it. And thanks to listeners for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Take care.